This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living and I'm Meera Sivasudhi. In the studio with me is a consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon. His name, Dr. Roshan Gunalan. And today we're going to be discussing lower limb deformities in children. Dr. Roshan is from the Subangjaya Medical Center. And what do we mean by lower limb deformities? Well, we're talking about conditions like bow-leggedness, even knock knees. It goes much far beyond that. There's a lot to talk about as far as lower limb deformities are concerned. But we have our phone lines open today. If you have a question, it's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018 789 8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome to the show, Dr. Roshan. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
You know, let's just start very quickly because I have to get this off my chest and tell the whole world who you really are. You are actually son of the late Dato Panch Gunalan, Malaysia's badminton superstar from back in the day.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Okay, what was it like growing up as Panch Gunalan's son?
Honestly, I got used to it after a while because it's difficult growing up in his shadows. But it was, to me, he was just a dad. So I think he kept it separate from his, his personal life from...
Do you play badminton?
That's the question I get asked a lot.
It's assumed that you would play badminton.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, with my dad, he taught me how to play, but he never trained me to play. Okay. So I never really did.
Play badminton.
Yeah.
You play tennis?
No.
No. Okay. All right. And you are a consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon. Now,
right.
How many of you are there in the country?
In Malaysia, those that are pediatric orthopedic are generally less than 20, I would say.
Okay. And
nationwide.
What made you want to subspecialize in pediatric orthopedic surgery?
I think, to be honest, I actually was doing general orthopedics. And when the opportunity came to join the university, this was one of the available slots that I had to take. And with that, I sort of developed an interest in it. So once I started working in it, only then I sort of liked it and I got, trained in that field, in that art, basically.
It's very interesting because, we always have conversations with orthopedic surgeons and they always tell us that a child is not a small adult.
Exactly, yes.
You would be the best person to tell us what that really means.
Okay, so if you're looking from the musculoskeletal point of view, bones point of view, there's a lot of difference between a child and an adult. So it goes from the anatomy of the bone itself, the different regions in the bone that a child has and an adult doesn't have. Things like the growth plate, which is the factory that makes the bone. They have a thicker sleeve around the bone, which helps in bone healing. And generally, they have a lot of cartilage in their bone. So if you take an x-ray, what you would see is a lot of empty spaces. And it takes a lot to actually figure out if there is a fracture or if there isn't.
That space is purposely there to be filled up as
in
you
bone.
Grow?
As you grow, the cartilage, which is actually soft bone, becomes harder bone. And only then it becomes visible in the x-ray.
Okay.
So physiologically, also the bone behaves differently from an adult bone. So the fractures that happen in children, they follow a specific pattern, which you don't see in adults. And they tend to heal a lot faster than in adults. So the management actually varies with both. It's not, you can't actually treat them both the same. The same fracture in an adult and a child will be treated differently.
Okay. We often think that children fall, get up, will heal very quickly.
Yeah.
That comes part and parcel of life, really.
Yeah.
When does it become a problem? When you ignore a fall or, something that affects the musculoskeletal system?
I think as time has gone by, I find that we see a lot more fractures or injuries with much more trivial sort of falls. Back in the day, people fall from the tree and they run around after that. Here, children can fall off the sofa and have a fracture.
Really?
So times have actually changed a little. And the thing is, if, like, as a parent, you're worried that, your child has fallen, is it necessary for me to see a doctor? One thing to look for is how the child behaves after that. If they are able to shake it off and walk around after that, most likely there's no fracture. If they refuse to put weight on that leg, let's say they've fallen on the right leg and they just don't want to step on it, they're hopping around, hobbling, then there could be something wrong and that would require the attention of an orthopedic surgeon just to clarify if there's anything going on. The second is if it's a very young child, of course they can't walk or anything, one thing to notice would be if they're moving the limb the same as they were before the injury. A lot of kids, like the parents tend to pull them by the hands and whatnot, and then they say, oh, it's not moving the limb since then. So these kind of things you have to notice. If they're not moving it and they were moving it before, it may be a cause of concern and needs to be checked out.
So you need to be alert as to what they're actually doing. What you said is quite interesting. Why is it, you know, people fell from the trees back in the day and they were all right, and now we can't seem to even fall off a chair?
I think it's very, very multifactorial. It goes beyond, you know, when I would speculate a few things. Things like the diet currently, maybe it's not as good as it was before. Activity of children is not as active as they were before. Kids nowadays are very much homebound and online compared to before, where they used to run around. So if you do run around, you actually build up the strength of the bones and the muscles, and you tend to, you know, be a little bit fitter on that sense. And that may be, you know, some of the reasons why we see a little bit more injuries in trivial sort of falls nowadays.
Diet and inactivity, the change in that pattern, in those patterns. Let's talk about lower limb deformities in children. How big a problem do you think it is in this country?
To say it is a problem, it's a bit difficult to actually define, you know, whether it's a problem or not, only because lower limb deformities have two very big categories. One of it is a physiological variant, which just means it's a normal child which has what looks like a deformity, and one of it is an obvious pathological deformity. And identifying that, I think, is the biggest trick at the moment. And identifying it at the right time and intervening at the right time as well.
So physiological meaning you were born that way?
Born that way is one, but it also follows a pattern where they develop that way. Children have a varying sort of degree of development. So for an example, you mentioned earlier about bow legs and knock knees. Mm-hmm. Every child is actually born with a bit of a bow leg. Okay, so usually parents come, I have this graph to draw, but on radio it's pretty pointless now. What happens is when they are born, they are bowed, and as they come to the age of about 2, 2.5, they tend to straighten out by themselves without any intervention. When they go to about 4 or 5 years old, they're a little bit knock-kneed, and when they're about 7 or 8, they develop what is known as the adult alignment, basically. So this is a physiological curve that every child follows. The only thing is, some children, the degree of curvature is a little bit more. So it's more obvious to someone who's looking at it. If you measure every child, you take an X-ray and you specifically measure, they will have this variation going at the specific age. So you have to identify which is physiological and which is pathological.
So when is a child's lower limbs formed? Is it when they're in the mother's womb or after they come out?
Oh, no, the limbs are well formed when they come out. Because if you've seen babies, of course, they have limbs.
But the outcome of it?
Uh-huh. So how it works is usually the limbs form at about 4 to 8 weeks of gestation. In that period of time. So the fourth week is where it starts. And the limb buds, as they call it, sort of form outwards. So limb buds actually look like turtles, you know, like a turtle shell and the flippers. They look like that initially. And the limb buds then get larger. And what happens is it goes through a few different stages. Yeah? They develop bigger. They start, the cells, which are sort of immature cells, start to mature and they start to differentiate. So once they mature into human-like cells, what happens is you start to get a differentiation of the cells. So you get things like muscles forming, you get the bones forming, you get the joints forming. And at the end of it, you get the digits as well, the fingers. So when it's a limb bud, so it looks like a bat, basically. Mm-hmm. And eventually what happens is there's a programmed cell that between the digits, between the fingers, that forms the digits at that stage. And if there's any problem at that stage, is why some children get, you know, their fingers stuck together, a syndactyly, as they call it, or those with an extra digit, something polydactyly, as they call it.
What do you mean by digits?
Digits mean the fingers or the toes.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So you refer to those as... Yeah. So these turtle-like things, they mm-hmm. sort of transform and become the limbs at the end of the day.
That's right. Okay. So they go through a few stages, basically.
So when you have lower limb deformities, is it determined when you're in the mother's womb or after you come out and how you actually develop over the years?
It can work both ways. So in utero, in development stage, a lot of things can go wrong. So it's I don't want to use too many medical jargon.
Sure.
So it's something like doing online shopping. Yeah, so it can all go wrong from the beginning when you click the wrong thing. And then, you know.
And you can't return it.
Yes, and then there's a problem with the delivery. And when the delivery guy comes, eventually you're not at home, so you don't get it. So the same with development of a limb, but things can go wrong anywhere along the process of it actually forming, it maturing, differentiating, and becoming a full limb as it is. And the factors that are involved are both internal and external. So internal factors are things like genetic components, mm-hmm. the factors that come in and are required to signal your limbs to form. Yeah, sometimes the signal is the wrong signal. Sometimes the signals are not received by the limbs themselves, so they don't mature properly. So then you can get a deformity. External factors are things like, you know, if the mom has taken any medication or drugs, like this problem with thalidomide back in the 60s.
What is that?
So that was a sort of a poisonous drug that was taken by people back in the 60s, and a lot of kids came up with deformities. But thank God that's half a century ago, so can't be happening now. And, you know, there's a lot more advancement in pregnancy that is preventing people from taking ridiculous medications when they are pregnant now. So you don't see the external factors that much, but internal genetic factors can be a problem.
Okay. And any external forces today you feel that could contribute towards lower limb deformity?
Well, these are the congenital type, those that are born with a deformity. So, no, not really. Sometimes you cannot control what is there. And the parents may be normal. It doesn't mean that just because, you know, mom or dad have it, but there could be a gene within the family that is causing the problem, genetic component to it. Or, as I said, the signaling within the mom itself as the child is developing is not accurate.
Okay. There's a difference between a deformity and a malformation. Could you just explain that difference to us?
Okay. So malformation is actually a limb that is abnormal. Nothing normal about it. It's formed abnormally and the baby looks abnormal, whether it's bent or straight or backwards.
So born like that.
Born like that. Malformation. Whereas a deformity is a deviation from the alignment. So if you have a normal limb, technically it should be straight. Yeah? Your femur and tibia, so your hip joint, your knee joint, and your ankle joint is in one line. If you have a deviation from this, they call it a deformity. So that can be either congenital, you can be born with a deformity, or you can acquire it somehow. Okay. After you're born.
Sure. And when it comes to diagnosing these deformities, when do you diagnose? Because as you said, first, you know, they're born and they come out bow-legged and then they become slightly knock-kneed. And then when do you know it's actually a problem?
Sure. So, the problem is actually that certain conditions have this physiological component, sort of the bow legs, which they have, you know, things that children will generally grow out of. Whereas there are other conditions, things like what is known as clubfoot, or congenital telipes equinovirus. So these are conditions that are pathological from the start and will need treatment as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So it's best that if the deformity is identified either by the doctor at birth or by the parents at home to be checked out early. The only reason is some of these need intervention, things like clubfoot and hip dysplasias. They need treatment early. Whereas things like bow legs, which could be physiological, if you intervene too early, you can actually lead into more complications later.
Okay.
So there's a time frame where you actually have to treat them and where you don't.
Okay. Can you explain what clubfoot is? It's been a while since we've spoken about that.
All right. So clubfoot is actually congenital deformity of the foot and the ankle, in a nutshell. Just generally, that's what it is. So the baby comes out looking like a golf club. The foot looks like a golf club, which is how the name came about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a very rigid deformity of the foot, meaning which the patient looks like it has a deformity, and if you examine the baby, the foot, you can't actually correct it to a normal position.
So both the feet are facing...
Pointing inwards,
yeah. Okay.
And right. These conditions actually require treatment generally as soon as possible. And we've been doing this sort of treatment for a very long time. Over the years, we don't actually do much surgery for this, but what they do need is what is called serial manipulation and casting. So the baby comes every week. You actually manipulate the foot and put them in a full plaster cast, a POP, plaster of Paris cast. Mm-hmm. And every week they come and change the cast. And eventually you get a corrected position of the foot. And then they move on to specialized sort of braces and shoes, orthosis they call it for.
And that is quite effective?
It has been actually very effective, this method of treatment. It's recognized worldwide, and we've been doing it for many years here.
And you can do it without surgery now?
Almost 90% do not require surgery.
Which was the case before?
The case before was a lot of surgery was being done to correct these things. Because this treatment requires a long-term follow-up, and a lot of compliance from the parents And a lot of them actually trusting you that, okay, you know, it's not looking good today, but in time it'll actually improve. Surgery solves the problem really quickly. Everything looks good on the next day after surgery. Mm-hmm. But what happens is the children actually grow up with a very stiff foot, which is not as functional as treating them in this method.
Okay.
So this is like worldwide now the recommended method really for club foot treatment.
Okay. Hip dysplasia, you mentioned that just now. What is it?
Okay, so hip dysplasia, the long word is developmental dysplasia of the hip. So it can range from a baby being born with a hip that just makes a little click sound, or it can be a completely dislocated hip. So anything within that range, a pathology of the hip joint, is considered a developmental dysplasia of the hip. And generally what happens is the hip is a ball and socket joint. In hip dysplasias, the ball is not so round and the socket is too shallow. So they don't really hold each other too well.
Okay.
And as such, the hip just slips out easily. So these conditions, I see them commonly. It's not a very common condition. It's about 1 in 1,000, really. But what happens is they need treatment early, where we need to bring the head into the acetabulum, or basically the ball into the socket, and let the child grow. As they grow, they actually form into a proper ball and socket.
So I had a friend who, you know, whose child had this, and all the pediatrician said was to, when you wear the child's Pampers, to wear it tighter.
Okay.
And it fixed itself.
Yeah. Okay, so the thing
that
with...
That sounded pretty simple.
So the thing with dysplasia, DDH or developmental dysplasia, is it's a range. It can be from a very simple hip that is just slightly slipping out to a completely dislocated hip. So I assume this was probably a milder form of a dysplastic hip. Yeah?
Okay.
And treatment-wise, not to say put it tighter, actually what they need is to put the baby in a more abducted position, like open the legs up more. So they use double Pampers or triple Pampers.
Oh, right.
Right? And there's specific sort of devices called a harness which you can actually put the baby on to maintain that position. And that actually brings, basically it does the same thing. It brings the head into the acetabulum and it remodels into a hip as it is.
Okay. What are some of the other deformities or lower limb deformities that you come across?
Okay. So lower limb, not to say congenital, I think the big ones are club foot, which is what we do quite commonly. In toeing is another one. Pigeon-toed children who walk with their foot facing each other most of the time. So that can be quite a concern for parents.
Huh, so it's called in-toeing.
Yes.
Okay. My grandmother used to make us walk up the side of the drain to fix that problem. Okay. Do you think that worked? I don't know.
It did,
in
a way.
That problem, yeah. Because you have no choice but to walk on a very narrow, or you fall into the drain.
I can try that on the patients and see if it works.
If you find those drains today, they're not around anymore.
Yeah. Actually, what happens in in-toeing, it is generally a benign condition. So if a normal child, meaning a child with no other problems, has an in-toeing gait, it's again considered a physiological variant. It's just that some children are tall, some are short. So this child is walking like that, some children are not. And invariably, it just rotates out by itself and it resolves. So probably it's not the drain, but the fact that the child has grown up a little, that the foot has already turned by itself out.
Okay, but with some people, you still see quite obvious.
Correct, yes.
What possibly happened there?
Okay, so there are three places where this problem can arise from. From the foot, from the tibia itself, or from the top of the femur, the proximal part of the femur, which is the most common. And what happens is at the femur, there's actually an angle between the joint, and it's usually very high in children. It's about 40, 50 degrees, a certain angle that you see. And as they grow, that angle reduces. As it reduces, this in-toeing will actually change. But some children, it reduces at a much slower pace than others. So you may see them having this up to the age of 10, 12 even. And then they sort of resolve a little bit. But the only thing about in-toeing that the parents probably need to understand is it does not actually give any functional problem to the child.
Mm-hmm.
So they can grow normally, they should play games normally, you know, they can wear any sort of footwear. There's actually no restriction. The treatment is that the child will treat themselves by growing up.
Okay, basically. All right then. You make it sound so simple, but you know, as parents, you worry. So we'll come back and find out how you deal with parents and their anxieties, because I can imagine if you know we have children with lower limb deformities, the anxieties involved in that. You said you use the magical word shoes. I think a lot of us prioritize the type of shoes today that our children you know wear, and we spend a lot of money on shoes, as well as the fact that you know you have older people telling us, why are you wasting so much money on shoes? You know, how far do we need to emphasize the type of shoes that our children wear? And a whole load of other questions. We'll come back and find out more. If you have a question for Dr. Roshan Gunalan, he's a consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon from Subangjoy Medical Center. We're discussing lower limb deformities in children. Give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. In the Health and Living segment today, Dr. Roshan Gunalan, consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon from Subangjoy Medical Center, we're discussing lower limb deformities in children. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or just tweet us at BFM Radio. We've gone through quite a lot of, you know, a discussion on lower limb deformities, right from, you know, the different types which you see quite often. It's either sometimes congenital, sometimes it's acquired. It's interesting how the child's musculoskeletal system is so accommodating, actually, given that they're growing. It's interesting to know that, you know, some, you know, we're all born, and when we start growing, we are bow-legged, and then at some stage we become knock-kneed, and then everything sort of fixes itself. In-toeing is something we spoke about, when you know both your feet are sort of pointing inwards, something that also usually fixes itself. The you know important ones, or the ones that could be disturbing, are clubfoot. What else, Dr. Roshan?
Things like dysplastic hips, as we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Another common thing that I see is actually flat foot. So children who don't have an arch on their foot.
Yes.
So this is an extremely common complaint in the clinics most of the time, because a lot of children come in with this condition. And again, when it comes to flat foot, there is two variants that you have to identify. So you have to see whether they are a physiological type of a flat foot or the more rigid ones. So the physiological flat foot, or the flexible flat foot as they call it, actually, again, will sort itself out in time with certain sort of, you know, physiotherapy exercises and whatnot. Whereas the pathological or the rigid flat foot, that will definitely need some sort of intervention.
Yeah. Okay. And how important is it to have that arch? Because nowadays, you know, even if you identified young, you have so insoles that you can wear, or special shoes, which helps the arch form. How much does that help?
So actually, it's interesting that you brought that up, because the insoles or the arch, the arch support, do not actually form the arch for the child. Okay, the child will eventually form the arch. So at an early age, I think whoever is concerned with having children with flat foot, they have to get them checked to identify if it is a flexible type or a more rigid type. The flexible type, which is usually painless, it just looks that they have a flat foot, but when they tiptoe, you can see that the arch comes back. This type of flat foot does not need any intervention, including arch support. The arch support actually makes it worse. Because what happens is, when you have a flat foot, there's only one little muscle inside, one muscle area, that's very, very lazy and weak. So when the child stands, that sort of falls down and the arch is lost. Mm-hmm. And to train that, the best is for the child to actually run around barefoot. Only then the muscle starts to build up. If you give an arch support at a young age for a flexible foot, what happens is this muscle gets even more lazy. The arch does all the work for him. And you remove the arch, he just falls flat again.
Right, okay.
So it has to be identified which child is actually, you know, is suitable for arches, and which category, which may not be.
So diagnosis is very important.
Important at a young age,
I mean, do you find that a lot of people now, I mean, you have specialty shoe shops and all of that, where parents end up going straight and bypassing you. And I'm sure you see a lot of the consequences of that.
Correct. I think the problem is it can be very commercialized at the moment, selling shoes and telling parents that if they don't use it at this age, the child will develop, you know, spine problems, they'll have, you know, uneven posture, they'll have pain. And it would scare me as a parent as well to hear all that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there are certain types of sort of flat foot and whatnot that does require a special shoe or an orthosis or an arch support. But there are majority of them who actually may not require this. So if that is identified early, I think it will actually help the patient and also the parents financially not to, to waste on shoes that may not be relevant for them.
Okay, so when do we start worrying about good shoes? I mean, how important? Because then, you know, we spend tons of money, you know, when our children start walking, and these shoes are expensive. And then you have grandparents saying, y'all are wasting your money because all we didn't grow up with such shoes and we're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So what is it? Should we or should we not?
I think, we should follow what your grandmother says, even for walking by the drain. I think she's fairly sensible in that sense.
See, they didn't have pediatric orthopedic sessions like you,
She did your grandma. So, in actual fact, I think it's important to identify it. It doesn't mean that things like flat foot, which is the commonest where children are buying these shoes nowadays, you know, because they have flat foot, they get a special shoe. I think at a certain age, it may be required. Those above 10, I would say, with a flat foot that hasn't resolved by then and is starting to have pain. If not, continue with the exercises, the foot arch will actually form. Yeah. And a lot of these flat feet are actually hereditary in a way. If the child has flat foot, the next thing to do is examine the mom and dad, because one of them may have it. Or someone in the family will have some sort of a flat foot. So strangely enough, this the pattern of the feet is more hereditary than, you know, whether you look like your dad or not.
They
may not look like him, but his feet might look alike. Yeah.
Dad or mom, both?
Either way. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's interesting.
So the pattern is there. But so if they have a flat foot, generally the mom or dad will have a flat foot. And if they have come to that age and they have actually no problems functionally, even if the arch is not fully formed, actually, the child doesn't need any treatment. He will end up like dad when he's that age.
Okay, because, you know, they turned out fine.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a question, Dr. Roshan. This is coming from Sri, who says, I just delivered 1 month back and the doctor discovered my baby has a leg shortened on the right leg compared to his left leg. He has been referred to an orthopedic surgeon. Will he be a normal child? Would you have advice? She's worried because her two other kids are normal. She's wondering what went wrong. You know, the leg is shortened by about 3 inches. She needs your advice.
Okay. So for cases like this, when one limb is shorter than the other, I think it is definitely something that does require an intervention. So the child has to be examined. The causes can be many, but the commonest, I would still think, just based on that little bit of history, would be the fact that the hip may be dysplastic. When you have a dysplastic hip, the hip dysplasia we talked about earlier,
it's not in the socket.
It's not in the socket. Mm-hmm. So it actually goes higher up, and in which case the limb actually looks shorter. So the bone length may be the same,
right,
but because the hip is not in place, it's gone up. If you measure both legs, it's going to look shorter. So that would be probably my provisional diagnosis at the moment, just based on that. Saying which, there are various other lower limb conditions, a bit more rare, that can also cause one leg to be shorter than the other. And 3 inches sounds like quite a significant amount.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice would be to actually get him checked out, probably get an X-ray or even an ultrasound, because he's very young at this age, to see if the hips are okay first. And after the assessment, only then we can figure out a treatment plan for a child who has a limb length discrepancy.
Okay, but most of the time you say it's probably hip dysplasia. Yeah, and
that would just be a best guess at the moment.
What would you do depending on the hip dysplasia?
So if it is a dysplastic hip, then it definitely requires treatment. Initially, we will put them on a harness or even the double pampers, triple pampers, to keep the hip in that abducted open position so that the hip joint is sort of in place with each other.
Okay. We have a question here from Ravi. Thanks, Dr. Roshan. Could you please sort my daughter's indifference? She is walking normally, but when excited, she keeps walking on her heels and quite fast as well. She's been doing this since she was 1 year of age, and now she's 2.5 years old. Walking on the heels, that's pretty normal. Maybe Ravi meant walking on her toes, perhaps.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I've never really seen kids walking on the heels, so...
Really?
Excitedly. Tiptoeing, it's fairly common.
Very common.
Okay, so tiptoe, or even if it is heel walking, it's not a problem. It's something that, of course, I have to assess to give a proper diagnosis. But
have you seen that walking?
No. Heel walking is very uncommon, and not really. But tiptoe walking is fairly common. And again, it has to be seen early. She's about the right age, at about 2, 2.5.
Yep.
If it's habitual, because some children actually like to walk on tiptoes, but when you examine them, everything else is normal. When I say everything else, I mean their muscle function is normal, their reflexes are normal, their sensation is normal. So their musculoskeletal system is generally intact, but they just love to walk on a tiptoe heel, and their calf muscles are not tight.
It's like a habit.
It becomes a habitual tiptoeing. So that can be treated easily. Just generally, if they get bigger and they get heavier, even they realize that it's a silly idea to walk on the tiptoes because it's not comfortable, you know? But if it's not, though, if there is an abnormality in one of these things, whether the muscles or the reflexes are abnormal, then she needs to be investigated a little further, because there are some underlying conditions that actually can present as tiptoe walkers.
Okay. So chances are, I mean, Ravi, maybe you need to clarify whether this is really the heel or not, because Dr. Roshan, yes, it's walking on... Sorry, yes, walking on her toes is what he meant.
Okay.
Yes, okay. You know, when you talk about... lower limb deformities. I was also reading that it affects energy expenditure. Could you explain that link?
Okay, so if you look at the lower limb per se, whether it's an adult or a child, what they mean by the alignment of the lower limb is that when you're standing straight, the forces are passing through the middle of the hip, to the middle of the knee, to the middle of the ankle. Any deviation from that, it's an abnormal alignment, malalignment. Okay, and the energy is meant to be at optimum when this alignment is intact. But once there's a deviation, you tend to put a bit more pressure on abnormal parts of the joint, and that can lead to early degeneration. And it also, you tend to spend more energy walking. I mean, you will actually get tired if you have an obvious deformity.
Because you need to compensate
for it. And you tend to walk less, less fast, less efficient, and eventually develop pain from various other joints as well.
Are we all born with a perfect alignment?
It's not to say perfect. There's always a range.
There would be, isn't it? Just like how the curvature of all our backs, our spine.
Yeah.
There's hardly all of us with many of us with 100% curvature. Yeah.
It won't be exactly aligned, but what you look for is the mechanical axis, as they call it, in a child. It varies in children. It varies with age, but once you've reached the adult sort of anatomy. Then that alignment is actually fairly similar to everyone, whether they are thin, fat, short, tall, anything.
Okay. So now the fact that we have children who are obese, children who are inactive, what do you see in your clinic? I mean, how is that affecting the musculoskeletal system and its development?
I think obesity has, musculoskeletal is probably a small part of the problem in obesity. There are a lot of other medical issues that they have as well. But the commonest kids that I would see with obesity are those that have bow legs, which are the pathological type, which means those that are not the physiological ones. Mm-hmm. And they are the big, those with a high body mass index, those with obesity. So that would be the most that I would see, I think, in children with obesity affecting the musculoskeletal system.
Okay. And what about, excess weight, what does that do to the lower limbs?
Sure. So what it does is exactly the same thing. If you have excess weight, even if your alignment is perfect, you're actually putting a lot of stress on all the joints, and the more pressure you put on the joint, the more it degenerates. So these children will eventually get degenerative diseases a lot earlier than, what others would.
So you'd be doing knee replacements really young.
Knee replacements shouldn't be done too young, but they get the same problem as someone who would need a knee replacement.
Yeah.
Treatment may be different from a replacement in a younger child, a younger person even. Younger adult, but they degenerate a lot faster, and it causes them a lot of issues due to that.
Okay, and without the proper exercise and the inactivity and all of that, how does that affect the muscles and how that supports the bone and everything else?
I think in a normal development of a child, the mechanical forces that are applied to the body are important, not just your nutrition. So meaning which, if you're just lying around on the couch, you're not getting enough stimulation of the bone to grow or the muscles to strengthen or the joints to actually move the full range, you can end up with problems as they get older. They get stiff joints, they get very, easily fatigued muscles, and the bone is just not strong enough. Sometimes simple falls like I mentioned earlier can cause a fracture. So this is coming to the forefront now because there are a lot of children who aren't that active.
Category.
Yeah. Saying which, there are others who are, you know, more active, and there are schools that are actually promoting, you know, physical activities and games and sports a lot more than they were before. So I think the trend will change. It's just that we have to change with it at in time as well.
Are you concerned?
I think yes. I mean, just because concerned in what way, you mean?
With the types of deformities you're actually seeing.
The deformity per se may not be caused by the inactivity, but the problems that they face, things like the muscle fatigue and the fractures and all that, that can be a cause of concern, because these are perfectly normal children. They don't, you're not born with any congenital problem or syndromes, or, you know, they have nothing wrong with them. So they should develop normally, and they should maintain that healthy lifestyle to actually, you know, reach their optimum potential. So it does actually, you know, reduce their potential at the end of the day.
Okay. We have another question, but I'll come back and answer that right after the market update. We'll also talk about parent anxieties. We've not come to that one yet. And I'm still not done with you when it comes to the expensive shoes. So that's coming up next. If you have a question for Dr. Roshan, give us a call. It's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We are in our final few minutes of discussing lower limb deformities in children. Dr. Roshan Gunalan, a consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon from Subangjaya Medical Centre, in the studio with me. If you have a question, give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Daniel Lee has a question, Dr. Roshan. Will knock knee happen on both knees, or can it just be on one leg, and what can we do about it?
Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, knock knees is one of the physiological variants, only if it is occurring on both sides. So if it's a bilateral knock knee and the child is at the right age, which would be about 4 to 5 years, then you can consider it physiological if it's not too much the angle. But a unilateral or one-sided knock knee is most likely abnormal. So this will require some sort of intervention. And depending on the age of the child, there are various methods that can be used to actually correct that deformity. But most of them will involve surgery.
Okay, yes. Them, yeah. So let's talk about surgery. How much of these deformities actually need surgery?
Okay, it's difficult
to
put a number to it. But those that basically those that do not follow the normal pattern, physiological pattern, which means someone with a bow leg at 4 years old is abnormal. So he's not following the pattern of other children. He will need treatment, you know. So in a range, maybe out of 100 children, maybe only about 10 to 15 will require surgery.
Okay.
So it's much, much lower than those that are on the normal sort of physiological bandwagon, whereas the pathological ones are a lot less. However, they have to be treated at the right time.
So that's the thing, right? A lot of it, is it watchful waiting before you
Most
decide?
Of them is.
Because they're children?
Can pick up subtle signs, even in a young child, those, like say with bow legs, and you think this is going to progress to something worse, there are small signs that you can examine them even at a young age and identify. So you feel that this child, yes, I think will progress to a worse condition. He will need intervention. But again, at what age is it's important to identify the correct age to actually
treat them. For intervention. Okay. Question here from Lily. How does someone with a lower limb deformity, for an example, bow-leggedness, does that sort of lead to arthritis in the long run? Or, you know, a lot of these lower limb deformities, do they lead to other conditions later on in life?
Yeah. The big answer is if it is the type of bow legs that is getting worse, progressing or pathological, yes, it does lead to degenerative joints and eventually arthritis itself.
Okay. So, what about one's gait? Can you explain what gait is and how a lower limb deformity as a child will affect your gait?
Okay. So gait in a child is difficult to really explain, because the gait changes as they grow. You know, a child who just started walking obviously stumbles around and falls, whereas those that are older are more steady. So you can't, like, you know, panic if your child is at one and they come to me and say, oh my God, the child is falling all the time. I'm not worried, because a one-year-old should, you know, fall and get up and learn to walk. If he's not falling at all, then there's something abnormal with him. This is progressing too fast. So the thing is, it depends on the age and the gait. But all gait pattern in a child will reach what is considered the adult style of walking by the age of 8 to 10. So until then, there will be a variety of ways of walking, and especially running. Because there's a lot of children who run very funny. They run like a bag of spanners sometimes.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And, you know, obviously the parents are worried about it because they look awkward. But a lot of them is fine, you know, I still run that way, so it's okay.
Really?
But yeah, no.
Is that why you didn't play badminton?
I think so, yeah. But it depends. Once you're at a certain age, then you have to identify how normal or abnormal the gait is and whether any intervention is going to help. Yeah. So.
Let's talk about parent anxiety. How do you help parents, or how do you help manage their expectations?
Right. So a lot of these children actually come in because usually the parents, to those that notice it very early, and those that someone else notices it for them, which is also very, very common. There's always some grandmother or aunt or someone saying that your child is walking funny or something's not right. To the mom and dad, it looks perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. So you get different categories of parents coming in. But I think the thing important thing to understand is, as a parent, even if someone says, oh, something's not right with your child, he or she's walking weird, you will start to panic. And I think it's important to actually assess them properly and give them the information that I know in these type of conditions. For example, if someone is tiptoeing like earlier, the child has to be assessed first. I can't, off the cuff say this must be done for this child. So once being examined, then we have to identify whether this will require treatment and at what age the treatment would benefit the child. If it is something that's just normal, a habitual toe walker, then yes, things to change her habit of walking, maybe sort of rewarding her for not tiptoeing or something like that may actually help. But I think the main thing when dealing with parents is to get them to understand that either the condition is totally benign and it'll take time to resolve, or the condition is not so benign, or we're not sure at this moment whether it's going to get worse, but it's we have to watch as the child grows. Because
okay.
There are various conditions with various, the way they present over time. So a lot of patients are actually on long-term follow-up. Sometimes you see them 3 monthly, 6 monthly, just to see how the child develops, how they change their alignment, how they change the way they walk, etc.
Okay.
And yeah.
And let's just one last question about shoes, Dr. Roshan. How obsessed should we be about shoes? From the time out, when do we invest? When should we be investing? When should we just allow the child to walk?
Yeah, I think
without shoes.
Yeah, I think the best is actually if you're worried about footwear, the best is actually to go barefoot. Yeah, a lot of this traditional sort of martial arts and dancers and all, nobody wears shoes.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the best way to go from age old time. But nowadays, new shoes are coming with cushion support, heel support, and all. They're not wrong because obviously that's the technology that has come. However, they may not be of benefit to the child if there's something abnormal with the child. If it's a normal child and you want to wear fancy shoes with special supports and look nice, it's perfectly fine. But if the child has some sort of an orthopedic problem, whether it's a benign condition that will resolve or not, I think it has to be identified first before getting a shoe that would be required.
Okay. One last question. My daughter was born with a club foot on both feet and Ponseti method was done for her. That is the casting that
method,
you spoke about. She's now 19 months, preterm of 36 weeks and has yet to walk on her own. I'm worried if she needs any other intervention than the current OT being given to her, occupational therapy.
Okay, yeah, she probably does. At 19 months is a little late to start walking. For a girl, was it?
Yes.
She, yeah. The thing with clubfoot is, if it is an idiopathic clubfoot, which just means a normal child with only the foot having a problem, they generally, once it is treated and the position of the foot is fine, they should be able to walk and run and jump as normal. If they're not walking or they're delayed in their walking, again, the child needs to be assessed. If there's any underlying muscle or joint conditions associated with the club foot that may need some intervention as well.
Okay. So would you have a message for us? I mean, we've gone through quite a lot of information here about the various deformities. I think what I'm taking away is that to a very large extent, the child's musculoskeletal system is very unique. It's still developing. As you said, there are gaps still filling up and, these turtle-like things. You know, I've got to go back and listen to all of this. And how it's actually, developing over the years. It's fascinating, really. When does it all settle? When can you say the musculoskeletal system is fully formed?
Okay. So generally, girls by the age of 16, boys 17, 18.
Okay, so till that time.
The musculoskeletal system is still developing. You're considered skeletally immature even as a teenager. until you reach the age where you're considered skeletally mature. So what you look for is a thing called the growth plate in the bones on the x-ray. So once the growth plate fuses or close, then you're an adult, basically.
Okay.
Physically.
And what can we do to ensure, I mean, you know, lower limb deformities, musculoskeletal deformities aside, how do we ensure that our children grow up with a healthy musculoskeletal system? What are the basics that's needed?
I think a child needs to play. So generally, you shouldn't neglect that aspect of their life as they're growing, developing as a young child and even as an older child. So physical activity, games, very, very important. There are a lot of new wave things going on, even for children to start, working out like CrossFit and stuff like that, where children start early at a young age. And that actually develops them a lot better in a way.
What are your thoughts on weight training for?
Weight training, it depends. If it's a supervised training, you're not carrying heavy weights. You're doing sort of range of motion exercises to build strength without lifting actually heavy weights, then it's actually quite safe. But if you're doing heavy weights, then it's not, because you're going to fuse the growth plate that you have and you tend to not grow after that. So it can, there's a risk of something like that happening.
The fusing happens
earlier than
immaturely.
It should. Immaturely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So that's interesting. So weight-bearing exercise.
Weight-bearing and range of motion, functional exercises.
Okay. It's just got to be under supervision, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you have a message for us on lower limb deformities in children?
I think just for most parents and all, there's a large variety of variants in children. And those who are concerned, I think it is best to actually get them checked out, because there are those that may be benign and does not require any sort of intervention. But there may be a small percentage who, if identified early, can actually help. You know, if we intervene at the right time, the child can actually grow a lot more normal and be more functional at an early adulthood age, basically.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Right. Thank you so much.
Dr. Roshan Gunalan, consultant pediatric orthopedic surgeon from Subangjaya Medical Center, speaking to us about lower limb deformities in children on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.